If you're like me, you remember when education was about the basic skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic, and about reading great literature and history that gave our kids models of what it is to be a good person. Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum is bringing this kind of education back. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. There's always going to be opposition to any Supreme Court nominee. That's just the way it is, the way our political system is set up. There are general political opposition, and then there's specific issues upon which certain groups will oppose a Supreme Court nominee. In the case of Neil Gorsuch, what is it, and why do we find that the advocates of euthanasia oppose him the most? And what is the real reason for their opposition? Joining us to answer those questions on this Thursday afternoon, Wesley Smith. He's senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. He's author of several books, including Culture of Death, The Age of Do Harm Medicine, and a recent column for National Review Online titled Euthanasia Advocates Seek to Stop Gorsuch. Wesley, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Hey, Todd, how are you?
I'm doing well. You say that euthanasia advocate and the movement for euthanasia, they say that their opposition to Gorsuch is that he will overturn assisted suicide where it has become legal. You say there's more to it than that.
Well, that's what they're saying. And people, your listeners probably need to know that Gorsuch 10 years ago wrote a book called The Future of Assisted Suicide and Euthanasia, in which he basically opposes legalization and as a policy matter, and went into the, at that time, back in 2007, what the law was, what the experience was in the history of the euthanasia movement, and so forth. And so they have basically euthanasia advocates. In fact, there was a piece in the Washington Post just the other day, which is why I wrote the National Review piece, basically saying he's going to take away our sacred rights. Well, euthanasia and assisted suicide is not a sacred human right. It is, for the most part, not legal anywhere in the world. There are, of course, exceptions. The Netherlands, Belgium, Canada, and five states here in the United States. But the overwhelming majority of countries and states in this country outlaw assisted suicide and euthanasia. So it's hardly a sacred right. What they're really upset about isn't that Gorsuch would rule against assisted suicide laws where they are legal. I can't even imagine a case of that kind getting to the Supreme Court. There was a little bit of noise toward that end back when Oregon legalized assisted suicide in the 90s, but it didn't get anywhere. And whether or not I would think it would be constitutional or not, I cannot imagine any case getting to the Supreme Court in which somebody tried to claim that a law legalizing assisted suicide was unconstitutional. It just won't happen. What they are worried about is that Gorsuch would not rule that laws against assisted suicide are unconstitutional. That's the thing they're concerned about. And that's why they don't want him on the court.
So you say what they are hoping for is their very own Roe v. Wade of
Absolutely.
Assisted suicide. What would that look like?
Right. Well, they've tried it once before in 1997. They brought two cases, and this was done by what's now called Compassion and Choices. It used to be known as the Hemlock Society, along with some doctors and patients. And they sued to have the then Washington law outlawing assisted suicide. Washington has since legalized it. But at the time, it was against the law in Washington, declared unconstitutional, as well as New York's. Both were found by 9-0. I mean, that doesn't happen too often, that those laws were not unconstitutional. And one of them had to do with whether there is a right to assisted suicide, kind of based on privacy, and it was found no. And the other had to do with which was the New York case, Vacco v. Quill, in which the claim was that because people have the right to refuse unwanted medical treatment, even if it leads to death, that's the same as assisted suicide, which it isn't. The court ruled 9-0. Now, what the plan that is afoot here in this country is for, by euthanasia advocates, assisted suicide advocates, in my view, to try to get enough states to reach a tipping point wherein they could go back to the court and say, well, things have changed now. More states have legalized it. We will claim that there have been no abuses, which is factually not true, but let's not get into that here. And so now we will have a Roe v. Wade case forcing assisted suicide throughout the country. Well, the Constitution will not have changed. It's just that they're hoping that the hubris of judges will have changed. That worked in Canada. In Canada, you had in the 90s a 5-4 Supreme Court decision saying there was not a charter right or the constitutional right in Canada to euthanasia. Back in 2015, there was no change in the charter, but a ruling 9-0 that there was such a right. So, you know, this is all about policy. And they know that Gorsuch, who is a judicial conservative, who has basically said that he doesn't believe it is up to courts to legislate from the bench, they're pretty clear that he will not find a Roe v. Wade type of right to assisted suicide in the Constitution. So they don't want him on the court because that makes their plan of the tipping point and then another try of at what they failed at before less likely to succeed.
This seems to be a well-worn page in the playbook. You assume and assert that something, in this case, euthanasia, is a basic human right. There's no history for it. There's no basis for that. There's nothing. I call it just moving the goalposts. You just blatantly pick them up and move them and say, guess what? We just moved this thing into the realm of a basic human right. And if you oppose it, you're opposing human rights.
Yeah, it's a time-tested effort. And what I find happening, particularly on the political left, I'm not trying to be partisan here, but what are really policy differences, you know, I mean, I understand the policy arguments in favor of assisted suicide. I don't agree with them, but I understand them, and I understand why people might disagree with me. But there is a desire, particularly on the political left, to conflate a proper, from that perspective, policy desire with a right. Because if it's a policy desire, we put in a policy, that policy can actually be changed or can be even rescinded or as we're seeing right now with the arguments over Obamacare. Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, was a policy. The Republican Party, and I'm not taking a position on that here, for years ran on the plank that they were going to revoke or rescind that law. And that is now taking place because that's a matter of policy. What the left, political left, tends to like to do is to get a policy into place that they approve of and then say, well, now it's a right and you can never change it. You can never take it away. You can only expand it. So that's certainly the game that is afoot.
What would you say to someone who says, look, the reason we're opposing Gorsuch is that he's going to be one of those guys who imposes his personal views on the law, and that's bad to have on the Supreme Court in any event. How would you respond?
But there's no history of him doing that, as far as I can tell. And I'm a lawyer, as you know, and I'm glad you don't hold that against me. Mm. But one of the things that really impressed me about what he has said since his nomination by President Trump to the Supreme Court, he said that if any judge has never ruled against his own personal policy preferences, that is a bad judge. That's exactly right. Too often today, you'll see, well, you know, will you do this as a judge or will you do that as a judge? Conflating policy with law, with proper jurisprudence. Is this constitutional? What does this statute particularly mean in terms of the words that were used in the statute? We have turned the judicial branch, which is a co-equal branch, into many legislatures. That's not what was meant, and that is a prescription for tyranny Because if you can just have a very few people basically say that we're going to get rid of democratic deliberation on particular issues, as occurred in abortion, well, then you're just basically saying that we might as well do away with state legislatures on these issues and the federal government on these issues, depending on the issue in question. So Gorsuch has impressed me as somebody who precisely would not impose his policy preferences into a constitutional decision.
How would you, since you did review his book on euthanasia, oh, what was it, about 10 years ago, I believe?
Yeah, it's been, I haven't read his book for 10 years, but I have read my review. Funny thing, people said, what did you think of his book? And then I found out, oh, I did review it. So I've been sending that review out because it reflected my thinking of his book at the time.
How would you summarize what he put down there? And this is the kind of stuff that a nominations hearing is going to look at. How would you summarize what he had to say there?
Well, he was very good in terms of his review of what the law was at that time in 2007. Now, states since then have legalized assisted suicide beyond Oregon. So obviously his book is stuck in time at the time it came out. So he was very good in going over what the law was and the precedents. He was also very good in terms of the philosophy and stating why he did not oppose it. At the time the book came out, I was disappointed that he didn't get into the politics of why at that time only Oregon had legalized assisted suicide. There is a tremendous political struggle ongoing on this issue. And I think that's a big part of the question, because as I mentioned earlier, I think that this is going to be resolved one way or the other as a matter of policy, not as a matter of constitutional law. And he didn't seem to understand why the politics of the thing became much more difficult for assisted suicide advocates than they had expected. After 1994, when Oregon legalized assisted suicide by 51-49 vote, by the way, many people thought, oh, this is going to sweep the country. There's not going to be any holding it back. People tell me in debates, well, it's an idea whose time has come. And my response is always, that doesn't mean it's a good idea. But it didn't sweep the country, and it didn't sweep the country because of the entry into the fray of the disability rights groups, which we've discussed on this show before. That is, disability rights activists, unlike pro-life groups, which tend to be conservative, tend to have a religious orientation, tend to, obviously pro-life on abortion. Disability rights activists tend to be very liberal politically, tend to be very secular in their outlook, and tend to be pro-choice on abortion. And when they came in the mid-90s to push against assisted suicide because they saw that they were the targets, which is true, people who have to deal with situations that disabled people deal with every day often give the reason for wanting assisted suicide, needing help with hygiene, fears of losing dignity, worries about losing the ability to engage in enjoyable activities, these kinds of things. Existential issues of that kind are by their very nature issues that disabled people deal with. And the disability rights group said, holy cow, we're the targets. And they really came in strong. And they have been, I think, not the only reason, but a primary reason why, even after more than 20 years of intense advocacy, millions of dollars of George Soros money into Compassion and Choices, that assisted suicide is still the strong minority position. I mean, it's only five states, 10% of the states. One of them, of course, is California, so that's a lot of people. But it has still been kept relatively small because there's a diverse political opposition. And my view was that Judge Gorsuch did not get into that issue. But then again, he was looking at it more philosophically and legally than politically, but I think politics is a big part of the reason why you don't have 45 states with assisted suicide laws.
Many people are shocked to discover that really, in a lot of ways, the United States is kind of radical on that issue, and that so few countries have legalized it. They just assume that because it's touted as a basic human right, the more developed countries, so to speak, of Western Europe must obviously have legalized suicide. Is that just another example of kind of the trick they attempt to play? Oh, we're falling behind the rest of the world in this basic area of human rights?
Well, I also think it's the media. The media has chosen sides on this issue. The media has decided that assisted suicide is compassion, it's choice, and there's no legitimate reason to oppose it. And there's a lot of laziness, I think, in their reporting as well. In Europe, and they also don't like to report the horrors that are occurring in Europe, where the societies that have legalized have basically jumped into, you know, jumped off the cliff. The Netherlands, Belgium, they not only allow assisted suicide, but euthanasia of mentally ill people. As I've written about, in Belgium, they've had joint euthanasia killings of elderly couples who aren't suffering today in terms of illness, but worried about future grief because they're getting old and they know that at some point one of them may pass away, will pass away. And in Switzerland, where the suicide clinics charge $9,000, you know, for people to be made dead, and people have gone for various reasons, such as an elderly woman worried about losing her beauty is one of the cases. So those three countries have really shown what will happen once a society generally accepts euthanasia consciousness. But the only other country in Europe that has legalized, well, Luxembourg did, but that's so small as to there's not any information coming out. But Germany, a German court recently ruled that there may be a right, and so the parliament passed a very odd law that basically outlawed commercial assisted suicide so that the suicide clinics like you see in Switzerland can't be used, but that, you know, if a family member helps, it's apparently legal. It's all very kind of weird, but most countries in Europe do not permit assisted suicide. There have been tremendous efforts in England, Great Britain, to legalize it. They've all failed, and some of the best actual analysis of assisted suicide in Oregon was done by the House of Lords, which found abuses and which found that all of these great statistics that the state of Oregon produces every year to show how hunky-dory things supposedly are, those are based basically on doctor self-reporting, and the data that they collect is destroyed after every report is issued. So there really is no independent way to verify anything that the Oregon statistics state, but the media just loves to go and say, oh, look at these statistics, it's wonderful. Well, it isn't wonderful, but to get that through the media wall of obfuscation is very difficult.
Wesley Smith is senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism, author of several books, including Culture of Death, The Age of Do Harm Medicine, and a recent column for National Review Online titled Euthanasia Advocates Seek to Stop Gorsuch. Wesley, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thanks for having me, Todd. It's always good to talk to you.
You can read his review, 2007 review of Neil Gorsuch's book, The Future of Assisted Suicide and Euthanasia, at our website, along with his column, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. On the other side of the break, Aaron Wolf joins us. There's a girl state wrestling champ who is a girl, but is transitioning from male to female, or attempting the transition to pass as male. And as I said, the girl is a champion. And the school goes along with it, and the state goes along with it. Aaron Wolf says it's institutional child abuse, and we'll find out why after this.
In Western societies where the most basic notions of right and wrong are not only denied but actively suppressed, recovering a biblical and distinctly Christian understanding of the natural law is absolutely essential.
Aaron Wolf of Chronicles Magazine talking about his presentation at this summer's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
Traditionally, Christians have understood that man is not born a blank slate just waiting to be programmed like a machine. We are moral creatures whose imaginations are darkened by sin. Yet every person still has a basic understanding of right and wrong, because God has revealed it to us in his creation through natural law. Denying the vital role of natural law has grave consequences, not only for society, but for the church's crucial task of proclaiming the gospel.
You can meet and hear Aaron Wolf making the case for natural law Friday, June 9th and Saturday, June 10th at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference in Collinsville, Illinois. For more information, visit issuesetc.org.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Dr. Anthony Eslin will be speaking on the topic of imagination and education at the second annual Wittenberg Academy Family Retreat, which will be held at Camp Okoboji in Milford, Iowa on April 27th through the 29th, 2017. Join us and be immersed in God's Word, thoughtful discussions, and family fun. For more information or to register, visit www.wittenbergacademy.org and click on the registration tab.
Did you know that Luther Academy has been providing continuing education for confessional Lutheran pastors and laypeople worldwide for more than 20 years? Luther Academy publishes Logia, the Confessional Lutheran Dogmatics series, and Luther Digest. Find out more about Luther Academy and sign up to receive their free email newsletter at lutheracademy.com. lutheracademy.com and like them on Facebook, facebook.com/Luther Academy.